Good afternoon, everyone. This is Buck Wild from Bucks Nation, and I'm here with UNF Noel, a.k.a. Mike. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks.
We are here for podcast number 2 at the request of all of our fans, and we still don't have a name for it, although I'm partial to the Pewter Cast or the Pirate Cast or the Pewter Pirate Cast or Buck Cast, but I promise we will be putting up a poll at some point to have you guys vote on a name for this. We want you to have some input, and the podcast just doesn't have quite the same ring as what you might bring to it. So the first and the biggest thing we'll jump into is Josh Freeman and his injury. And for those who don't know, he was injured last night early in the first quarter. And on a third down play, he was going to complete a pass. His hand came through in his throwing motion, and he hit it on a Chiefs player helmet, which honestly seems to happen all the time. The bad news is he fractured the tip of his thumb. The good news is, at least per the Buccaneers, is he will only be out for the rest of the preseason, and he should be ready to go in week 1. For reference sake, Craig has sent an email trying to contact the Bucs PR department to get an idea as to what will be entailed with rehab and any of that. But for now, Mike, I'll turn it over to you. What does this mean for the Bucs team?
Well, it means that Josh Johnson's going to see quite a bit of playing time in the preseason, which last night he looked pretty good. So I don't know if we can complain too much about that. I know he's not going to get a lot of Freeman's not going to get reps in the preseason and in practice, which could hurt him. But I mean, preseason's preseason. Like, I honestly don't know how much you can improve in 2 more games and against subpar teams. But I mean, Freeman going in the first game, it sounds like he's going to be dealing with some nagging pain. The analogy or the reference to Brett Favre was interesting about how it's just kind of a lingering pain throughout the season, doesn't fully heal. So we'll see. I think Freeman's tough enough to deal with that a little bit.
Yeah, the only real negative I see is, I'm like you, I really don't care if he plays in the preseason. But given that we've got at least one starting rookie wide receiver, and we're still trying to put an offense together, seeing as how last season was a disaster. I didn't want him playing 4 quarters of preseason football, but I certainly would have liked him to at least get another half dozen to maybe 8 series under his belt going in. So it's, it's not a cause for concern. It just, you know, he's going to be probably a week or two behind where we had hoped he would have been at the beginning of the season.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him practicing a couple weeks, though, anyway. Miss the game, just throw around a little bit, get used to playing with that pain. It doesn't sound like it's going away, so.
Yeah, I read an article earlier today, and it was referencing Dave Moore, who I guess had the same injury. And Dave Moore, of course, is not a quarterback. He was a tight end and a long snapper for the Bucs. And he said that he had a hard time snapping the ball with this injury, let alone throwing an accurate pass. So he seems to think that it's going to be a bit more troublesome than any of us hope it'll be. At the same time, it's just one of those wait and see. Without, you know, I've never had a fractured tip of the thumb, and nor have I ever tried to throw a 50-yard pass with it. So I can't really speculate, but hopefully he's back in time. Hopefully week 1 comes, and while it might be a bit uncomfortable, hopefully it doesn't cause him to adjust his throwing motion.
Yeah.
The next big topic of discussion is, unfortunately, another negative one, and it's really with Derek Ward. The guy just can't seem to get going here in the preseason, and believe it or not, as much as I'm a Caddy fan, I find myself defending Ward, and hopefully doesn't come back to bite me. But what's your take on Ward and this whole second running back position?
Man, I don't know. Like, I'm starting to think that good season of his was the anomaly, and not so much last year. It just doesn't seem like that was a fluke last year coming into this offseason, into this preseason. He really has to turn his game around, because right now he is the 3rd best running back on our team, and at his cost isn't even worth keeping him around as a 3rd down or a 3rd back. It's just, I don't know, it's something that coaching staff is definitely going to have to weigh. But he has a long ways to go to be an effective running back in this offense.
Right. I keep going back to, I'm not as concerned, especially given that he is not our lead guy. I mean, he's a guy that has thrived in the backup role in the past, and granted, he was following Brandon Jacobs, who tended to beat up defenses, so the running was probably a bit easier than following Cadillac or Huggins, but I just can't see us cutting him for the sole reason that depth at running back is so hard to find. And any running back, not just Cadillac, but any running back in the NFL has a chance to get hurt. And if you don't have a quality 2 and 3, you're really up a creek with no paddle. I think Huggins is making a case for the number 2, which we'll get to in a second, but I just can't see us dumping Ward because there's nothing else out there for us to get. If there was another prime back that we could get that would fill that backup role, I might consider dumping Ward for that person. But if we dump Ward right now, we're going to run with Cadillac, Huggins, maybe Clifton Smith, or they could convert Ernest Graham back to a running back, but he's put on weight to play fullback, so I'm thinking they're going to leave him there. It's just a matter of, do we want to run the season with only Cadillac and Huggins, or do we want to have Ward as that insurance policy? Because with no salary cap, I'm not concerned about the money. I mean, maybe the team is, but it's not a groundbreaking amount of money. So I think keeping him on the team at this point is probably the best bet.
I mean, I think that's probably the way they'll go, but at the same time, I mean, we talk about he's a prime back, there's not really anyone better than him, but we haven't seen that. Like, I mean, we haven't seen any proof that he is a good back, a good depth back. He really just has given us absolutely nothing to hold it on. So, I mean, I honestly, is there a better back out there? At this point, probably. I don't know who that back is. But running backs in this league, too, are kind of a dime a dozen. I mean, you can find a good back in the weeds any day if you search long enough. But, I mean, look at Ryan Grant. Ryan Grant came out of nowhere and has been a productive back in this league for a few years. So is there a better back out there? I think it's a very good possibility. Or just his production isn't there at all. So I can't even say he's a good back right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they went into the season with him as the number 2 or 3 and then kind of just kept their eyes out on the practice squad to see who is available. I just can't see them outright dumping him for no one at this point. But, you know, we've got 2 weeks until final cutdown. So he'll be on the team at least for 2 weeks. I can't see Cadillac getting a whole lot of preseason reps. So Ward's going to have his chance, but he's got to stay on the field and he's got to do better than 3 to 4 yards, you know, every other carry. It's got to, you know, we've got to see some home run ability. If nothing else, we've got to see consistent blitz pickup because he's going to be in most likely on third downs if he plays at all. And he was all right last night in the blitz pickup, but nothing spectacular.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think they will keep him around for the season. I don't think he'll be cut, but I just don't know that it would just shock me, or even I'd be upset if they did cut him. I'm pretty indifferent right now.
Right, and that takes us to Kareem Huggins, or Huggy Bear, as some people call him. And, you know, while I'm excited about the guy, I find myself a little less enthusiastic about him than everyone else, and it's mainly due to who he's playing against. You know, what he's doing is great. You know, he has that home run ability. We see that he's consistently falling forward. He's very rarely getting stuffed at the line of scrimmage. But it's hard for me to take that seriously when it's coming towards the end of the second quarter when most of the backups are in, and then in the third quarter when it is primarily backups, if not third string. And he looks good, but, I mean, how serious do we take what he's doing on the field right now?
I don't think you can take it too seriously. It'd be interesting to see in the next two games if they would swap him and Ward, give Huggins some first team, and even strong second team looks, and then give Ward the lesser looks so they have something to compare. I think that's probably a good move. You're right. I mean, he's playing against scrubs, against guys that are potentially going to be cut or placed on the practice squad. But, I mean, you can't question how good he's looked doing that. I mean, he's been phenomenal this preseason.
Right. I think they should alternate him and Ward every other series. I mean, Ward's not going to be happy playing into the third quarter, but he's got a job to earn. And I don't want to see Huggins only or Ward only, because it's tough to evaluate against, let's say, the Chiefs. If Huggins plays against the first string and looks good, and then Ward looks good against the second string, then we have the whole, well, Ward only looked good because he played against the second string. Whereas if we rotate them every other series, they should face similar competition for at least a series or two apiece. And then that way we can look and say, if, you know, Huggins takes, you know, 8 carries for 50 yards and Ward takes 8 carries for 10 yards against similar competition, you know, we can draw a pretty concrete conclusion that Huggins is hitting it hard and Ward just doesn't seem to have it.
And the next 2 weeks will be a good evaluation period. The Jags and the Texans both have at least decent run defenses, so I think those two teams will be an okay evaluation for those backs.
Yeah, the other big position battle that we've discussed, and I've really been saying this since before the preseason, is our return specialist. And Clifton Smith obviously set out last night with a case of the gout, apparently, which if anyone wants to clue me onto that, I'll welcome the description. But he set out two games, and it's really a battle between him and Kareem Huggins. They both can fill the running back spot, although Clifton has the fumbling problems that we've all noted, and he's really also fighting against Spurlock for the return role. Now, I'm a big proponent of roster flexibility. If a guy can fill multiple roles, I tend to give him the edge over someone else, and I view Clifton Smith right now as only a return guy. I realistically can't see him as a running back just with his inability to hold onto the ball, which means that Huggins, who A, looks like a better running back, but B, could also fill in as the returner, and Spurlock, who up until last night, I pictured as more of a returner on wide receiver depth, but he's making a strong play to move up the depth chart. How do you see this panning out with the three of them between Huggins, Smith, and Spurlock?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I absolutely think they need to be able to play multiple positions if you're going to be a third running back or fourth running back or fifth wide receiver. You have to give the team some reason to keep you in. Kick returner is a great opportunity for Smith to show what he's worth, but you can't just have a kick returner on your team. It makes no sense to just have that. It's a valuable position, sure, but I think it has a lot more to do with the actual scheme, kick return schemes and blocking, as much as it does the returner. So I can't wait that too much in Smith's favor. And he's doing himself no favors by sitting out a game with gout. Fine, it hurts. I was reading on it before and it said it's essentially painful arthritis. I don't know if you can go through that or not, play through that or not, but regardless, he's working his way to either a practice squad or to be cut and signed by a different team. So
yeah,
I would be surprised if he is playing in Tampa this season.
So gun to your head right now, I'm going to run through just a list of players, and you tell me if they make the final 53 or they don't make the final 53. First up is Kareem Huggins.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Derek Ward.
Yeah, I think he will, I think he can go both ways, but yes.
Yeah, I'm counting him on the final 53 for now. Clifton Smith.
No.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Michael Spurlock.
Yeah, and strictly because he's had two very, very good preseason games as a wide receiver. Yes, it's preseason games, but he's still showing that he can catch the ball, he can get open, he can run accurate routes, which catching the ball and running accurate routes is something that we've lacked.
Right, and you know, on a side tangent here, people say that Smith is a better returner than Spurlock. And I haven't run any numbers on it, but I'd like to think it's the other way around. I mean, Spurlock has taken a kickoff and a punt back for a touchdown, the same as Smith. And Spurlock did it in really less time. He wasn't with the team all of last year, but we all know he took back the first kickoff ever for a touchdown a few years back. And last year in the Saints game, he took a punt back. So he's not a slouch. He's shown he can do it. And if nothing else, I would say he and Smith are equal in returnability.
I think people have this like stereotype image of what a kick returner should look like. Short, skinny, quick, fast feet. And I don't necessarily think that's true. I don't think Spurlock fits the typical stereotype of that. So people just rule him out. But I agree with you. I think he's as effective, if not more, than Clifton Smith. And he's playing a position well. So absolutely think he'll be there on the 53-man roster.
All right, what about Michael Clayton?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to cut him. I don't think he's giving a reason for him to stay, but I think just based on his name and the way he represented his rookie year, that they'll probably hold on to him for one more season.
Yeah, I think he's there too, for better or for worse. Preston Parker.
You know, I'd love to see a former Knoll, sort of, kind of, but no.
Yeah, I'd like to see him because I think he can be a good returner. He's shown that in the preseason, but he's so redundant right now when you look at Huggins and Smith and Spurlock and Strouder. I mean, he's a guy that can do it, but I don't know that he's heads and tails better than anyone else. So I really think he's destined for the practice squad, and I can see him being called up because, truth be told, if Smith or Spurlock make it, it may not be around all year. There's injuries that crop up, and Parker would be a good young guy to call up. I don't see him getting signed anywhere else. So I don't think he makes the 53, but I definitely think he'll stick around in Tampa, at least on the practice squad.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's kind of between him and Clayton. I don't see any reason why they're going to cut Clayton. I don't see any reason why they should keep him. But
yeah, what about Rudy Carpenter?
Yeah, I mean, he's played well enough to show that he can be a third quarterback, for what that's worth. Saw an article today that Craig posted about bringing Jeff Garcia back in. It made me laugh. I don't know that bringing Garcia back in to be a depth guy is the answer. Pretty sure we should just let him be.
Yeah, I don't know if Carpenter makes it or not. I mean, most teams will keep three quarterbacks and they'll have two active on game day. But I'm not sure on Carpenter. I mean, he looks accurate, but I don't know what it would be worth to keep him around as opposed to like an extra linebacker or an extra O-lineman. Because let's face it, Carpenter's not getting in a game unless both Freeman and Josh Johnson go down. I don't think anyone else would pick him up. He looks fairly accurate, but the arm strength is definitely lacking. And against top-flight competition, maybe we'll see in the next two games, but I just can't see him faring well against the first stringers. He doesn't look like he processes information quickly enough. And going down the field, I mean, I made the joke last night, he's a less accurate, lighter-armed Chad Pennington.
Which isn't going to earn you a spot in the NFL.
Yeah,
see out of you, but
I just don't know what he brings that we couldn't find on the street right now. There's going to be plenty of quarterbacks that are cut. I don't think he's the cream of the street crop, so to speak. So I don't know that he'll stick around. And if he does, I think it's probably for a couple of weeks they let him go and, you know, bring in the quarterback du jour to back up Freeman and Johnson.
Yeah, and typically teams like to have a veteran. I mean, Johnson's been like, what, two seasons now, so I mean, I guess you could call him veteran. But, I mean, you typically like to have the older veteran on your team to kind of lead the young guys, especially with a squad this young. But I don't know, man. Is Carpenter good? Is he worth starting? Is he ever going to be a starter in the NFL? Absolutely not. I mean, he doesn't have the talent to do that. But at the same time, with Freeman's injury, you never know how he's going to respond to that. And I think you need a third quarterback, and I don't think it's worth bringing someone that hasn't played in the preseason with your team at all.
Yeah, there will be some veteran out there that gets dumped, or, you know, a 7 to 9 year guy that is available. So I'm not holding my breath that Carpenter makes the 53. I don't think it's going to happen. But if he does, I mean, let's face it, he's not going to see any game time unless there's an absolute disaster scenario, at which point it doesn't matter who we throw out there. If we lose our top two QBs, you know, we might as well pack up and get ready for the offseason.
What about Lynch? What do you think about Lynch? You think he's going to make the squad?
He's one of the guys, like I said, I'm real big on roster flexibility. But I think there's certain guys that can make it such an impact at one position that they deserve to make it. And he's not going to block a kick every week. But I mean, I'll go on record as saying he's good to turn around one game every year. He's consistently in the backfield when teams are kicking or punting. You know, he blocked a kick last year. He came close to blocking a field goal last night. I don't advocate many guys sticking around if they're only going to do special teams. But, I mean, he's one of those guys that just, you know, I hate to use the cliche, but he's got a knack for the ball. I would much rather keep him as a one-function player than a Clifton Smith or a Preston Parker.
Yeah, I mean, there's players who have made a living in the NFL just playing on special teams, and like you said, it's never going to be a good safety. I think he's been solid on special teams enough to make a living on it. So it's not in Tampa; it's somewhere.
Yeah, his job, I mean, is going to be special teams, and I would much rather, like I said, I'd much rather carry him than carry a guy who's just going to return kicks when we've got other guys that can do that. I haven't seen anyone else on our team that can block kicks or put pressure on the kicker as much as he does. I've seen plenty of guys, you know, Strouder, Spurlock, Smith, to name three, that can return kicks. So I'm all for giving him that roster spot solely for what he does. The funny thing is we're about 20 minutes into this, and we've talked very sparingly about the game last night. As many people know, it's blacked out here in the Tampa market. It makes it real tough to analyze and follow the game. I was able to see part of it last night, and it's really tough to comment without having a chance to, you know, I like to rewind plays and watch what happens and to see how certain players do three or four plays in a row. But with the blackouts, it makes it tough, and I was getting aggravated last night trying to find a stream of the game somewhere. I can't imagine doing that on NFL Sunday. Were you able to see any of the game? And if so, I mean, do you have any outstanding thoughts on it?
I think I was able to see it about as much as you were. I got home a little late. Not making preseason games a huge priority in my life right now, but got home a little late. I was probably able to see as much as you were. I mean, in the preseason, you want to see how people are doing without the ball, not making stats, but still how they're playing. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, what are you gonna be able to tell from 6 snaps or 10 snaps or 12 snaps? Not much. So I was not able to see the first quarter, but I'm honestly not too concerned about it either.
Right. I did. What I did see, Mike Williams, he looks fantastic. I mean, it looks like he's been in the NFL for a couple of years, and it's not so much the way he's making catches. I've really been impressed by his footwork, particularly around the sidelines. That transition from college to NFL, from 1 to 2 feet inbounds for a legal catch, he looks like he's been doing it his whole life. He is a young receiver. He's going to make mistakes, but he'll absolutely be an asset to Freeman, who won't have to rely solely on Winslow this year.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about Williams stepping up, which he absolutely has, going to be a very good wide receiver this year, I believe. Strouder's played well. But we also don't really talk about Ben, which Ben's been kind of lurking in the background and really hasn't made his presence felt in Tampa as a receiver yet. And so we had high hopes for both of them. I honestly think Ben probably starts the season at 4 or 5 in the depth chart. I wouldn't be surprised to see Spurlock at 3, and Lord knows what they do with Clayton. So, I mean, they should have benched Clayton a long time ago, but I still have a feeling he's going to be pretty high up on the depth chart.
Yeah, I give Ben a little bit of a pass. Mainly, he hasn't done anything to look terrible. You know, he finds himself watching plays at times, which is normal for a young receiver. But he's got Josh Johnson, who's airmailing passes by 10 yards at times, and Rudy Carpenter, who, you know, has looked okay. I'd like to see Ben, and of course it's not going to happen now, but I would have liked to have seen him with Freeman, you know, with a somewhat real quarterback, to see how he handles a ball delivered on time and in the correct area, as opposed to some of the garbage he's getting now. It's tough to judge a guy when he's got a third string quarterback throwing to him.
No question, but at the same point, like, I mean, shouldn't he have been doing this in training camp and mini camps? And I mean, he's had plenty of opportunities to get thrown to by Freeman and by top notch quarterbacks, but he just, I mean, at this point, I don't think that he's really made his presence felt in any way at any time this offseason.
Yeah, the thing to remember about Ben is he was drafted because of the talent he possesses, not necessarily how good he was now. I mean, he's a very raw product still. He was at Illinois. you know, they ran a spread offense there for a couple of years he was there. So he hasn't played in a true drop-back system. He played in high school multiple positions, D-line, linebacker, as well as running back and receiver. So, I'm willing to give him a little bit of a pass for now for just not understanding the nuances of the position. Mike Williams is, I mean, he's a receiver. He played receiver. He was coached up as a receiver in a fairly typical pro offense at Syracuse. Ben didn't have that luxury, so he's naturally going to be a little bit behind. Hopefully it just takes some coaching and he can get up and running. You know, maybe by week 8 or week 9, he'll be getting to where he's like, all right, I understand what I'm supposed to be doing now. But again, I'm not ready to say that we blew a pick. I just think he needs some more more attention than Mike Williams does right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's right. I don't think we blew a pick. I still think has potential to be a very good wide receiver. But I mean, to get on the first team, even in preseason, to get on the first team, you still have to earn it. You don't just get there by someone holding out hope for you. You have to earn it in mini camps. You have to earn it in training camp. And he didn't do that. I mean, did he mess up to the point where we're ready to count him out, thinking about cutting him? I mean, no. I mean, he has, like you said, he hasn't done anything wrong. He just hasn't done anything to separate himself from any of our other receivers, which honestly isn't saying much.
Yeah. I guess the last issue to touch on here before we run this too long and everyone stops listening is I wanted to touch on the defense a little bit. And again, I'll admit I didn't get to see every snap last night, so my observations are on a limited sample here. But the first two games, I've been very underwhelmed by our first-string defense. The pass rush doesn't seem to be there. The linebackers, Black had a nice sack last night, and he made some splash plays. Hayes has been all over the field. You know, Root is there one play and not there the next. But when I see our front four, and even when we bring a fifth rusher, when I see them get stoned at the line against a maybe average at best Chiefs offensive line, I mean, that worries me. That tells me that we're either going to get no pass rush or we're going to have to bring six or more to get a rush. Is this just, you know, really a young defensive line trying to get used to each other, or do we have some serious tough roads ahead?
I don't know if you want to know my answer. I mean, I think we have a tough road ahead of us. I mean, they're young. Do they hold out potential? Sure. Defensive lineman, it's a tough position to transfer over to the NFL. Kansas City, I just looked it up, last year had the 30th best offensive line. I don't know what they've done this offseason to improve it, but when you just get blown up at the line of scrimmage like you did,
yeah, it's
I think our ends are still going to struggle against getting a pass rush, getting off blocks, and making plays. And Price had a decent game.
Price was out the first game.
He was out. So McCoy had a decent game in the first game, but I mean, there's going to be a lot of learning curve for them. I really think Miller is going to see quite a bit of time, and I wouldn't even be surprised to see Sims get a lot of playing time just because of the curve for Price and McCoy.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, you see the flashes from both Price and McCoy. There's no doubt that they've got the talent, but like you said, it's a tough position to learn, and we're asking these guys, we're not even asking them to play on third down or play 30% of the snaps. We're asking them most likely to start at defensive tackle and to make an immediate impact. And I just don't, I mean, will they make an impact? Sure. But it'd probably be once every, you know, 10 or 15 plays as opposed to every 3 or 4 plays. And that's
right.
That's really going to put a lot of pressure on our secondary, and they may be able to handle it. But it just is kind of frustrating because you get these guys, you think, all right, we're going to turn this thing around, and then you realize this isn't an overnight process. You know, this may take 6 to 8 games for them just to get an idea as to what's going on at this level. And that's perfectly acceptable. I mean, I'd rather them turn it on game one, but realistically, that's not going to happen. And to see our defense struggle the way they did the first two games, you just hope that the learning curve is very small and that they get it going.
Yeah, and we've been pretty, you and I have been preaching this all season. It's just about tempering expectations for the rookies. I think we're setting the bar incredibly high for them, almost to the point where in our heads we're expecting them to be Pro Bowl caliber, if not just slightly less, which is asking a ton from, what is it, 6 or 7 rookies who were going to be seeing immediate playing time, and even like 4 who were expecting to make an immediate impact. That's just a lot to ask for. So, could they have a good year? Yeah, they certainly have the talent too, but I think it's going to be a year where people are disappointed in them, but only disappointed because their expectations were far too high.
Yeah, like I said, it's tempering expectations. It's realizing where we are as a team right now. We're not one player away. We're not a 10-6 team looking to go 11-5. We're a 3-13 team from last year looking to take step 2 in hopefully a 3-4 year rebuilding process. And step 2 doesn't mean going from 3 wins to 11 wins. It means going from 3, hopefully you double that. You know, if we got to 6, I'm not happy with 6-10, but I'll take it. And anything over that is just a bonus. So I'm not expecting any leaps and bounds in game 1 against Cleveland. But by the end of this year, or maybe more accurately, maybe around week 10 or 11, this should be a team that we can get excited about. We should see the progress and realize that game 1 was just game 1. And by game 10, they're halfway through a season as a two-year team and ready to build off that. We saw the progress last year. We need to continue that early this year, then start to make that step into year 3.
Yep.
And that... Mike, unless you've got anything else to add, I think we'll wrap it up here.
I got nothing else.
Yeah, like I said, it's tough to get too much into the game. I wish we were able to see it. It's just a product of not being at the game. Hopefully we can get some wins early and get some fans to the games and sell it out so those of you who can't make the game can see it on TV. But for now, we'll go ahead and sign off and call this the end to podcast number 2. But please, please drop your name suggestions in the comments so we can get a good name for this.
Thanks, Buck. Well, appreciate it, man.
Yeah, you too, Mike.